Senor Rabbi.
Father Anderson.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Surviving.
I know. You've had like five funerals, or you're about to walk into a five funeral week.
Not so much five, but we've had a lot of bereavement, a lot of challenges.
Yeah, I had a week when the rector left for a sabbatical. Someone said, "Get ready, because people are gonna start dying." And there was. I had about 12 funerals to do. One of them was five in a row.
Wow.
And it's just like when the boss leaves, it's just this thing that happens in the Episcopal Church as people pass away. So, but in any event, we're here, man, and it's great for this podcast. I find funerals to be quite a actually very blessed and reverential time where people's hearts are really open because of obviously, you know, they're heartbroken. And so I find the spirit is really alive for people who normally might not be really present with the spirit that they are then. That's one big surprise in the ministry so far, as 2.5 years in, that I didn't expect that. I didn't see that coming. It's such an honor and privilege to be there.
Absolutely.
But just the presence of God, how pervasive
it is. And
being
able to take people through a very challenging and difficult moment and to be that presence.
Yeah.
That allows, you know, I mean, look, as a priest, as a rabbi, I mean, I'm in joyous occasions, amazing opportunities for families and for individuals, but we're also there for very challenging moments and be able to walk with somebody through that moment of, you know, trying to help them get through that process is one of the biggest, if not the biggest blessing that as a rabbi I could ever do.
You know, no, I agree. And it also shows how we have no idea yet of how to open our show. We just throw a funeral right at you. So I am Father Christian, and that is Rabbi Durbin. You're welcome to the podcast of A Priest and a Rabbi, which at one point was called A Priest and a Rabbi Walk Into a Radio Station. Now it's A Priest and a Rabbi Walk Into a Podcast, but we're like Jefferson Airplane.
But I think we've just changed the name to A Priest and a Rabbi dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, the ellipse.
Yeah,
the ellipse is in there. So we need to get the trademark people to tell them we're changing that. So today we're taking on something that absolutely another Judeo-Christian uniting force that we agree upon, which is the Ten Commandments. And we're not just going to sit here and talk about the Ten Commandments and do some scholarship. I think we're going to get in there and get down and dirty and start kind of tearing apart and seeing what's behind them, challenge them a little bit. You of having such an aficionado on biblical Hebrew to my right, I only took biblical Greek, I will admit. So you're going to be the guy. And what's the difference between murder and kill? You know, all those things. How do you honor your father and mother when maybe you're dad was a total how do you do that? So you know, man, I'm kind of geeked for today. What about you?
It'll be an interesting show for people to listen to.
It's always an interesting show, and I guarantee you everyone that he's going to throw out an Alyssa Milano reference, maybe a Backstreet Boys reference, and I think when we get something that is so unitable, as in the Ten Commandments, something that we read in church and something that you read in the synagogue, we're going to have a lot of stuff to say, and we're just going to toss the ball back and forth pretty rapidly. So I'm looking forward to this one, my friend. So, all right. So enjoy. As you know, this podcast right now is also part of how we collaborate with our radio show. So enjoy it. And please subscribe for this podcast. If you happen to stumble upon it, subscribe, give it a rating. We love it if you give it a good rating, and drop some comments of what you want to hear about in the future. What are the topics that you are curious to hear about from a faith perspective? We like to talk about it all. We go from pop culture to relationships to marriage, to funerals, obviously, and also current topics that are happening, especially here in Southeast Florida. So, all right, share away, and we'll see you on the flip side.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Hey, everybody. It is Father Christian, and to my right is Rabbi Matthew Durbin. And two of us are just here on this bright, shining Friday morning. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we pre-recorded it. Maybe we didn't. You'll find out when you call in at 772-220-9788. Nevertheless, though, we have some recent developments here, which are super exciting, is that we are now officially a podcast. And so that is awesome. So you can find us, A Priest and a Rabbi, on a variety of different platforms, mainly iTunes and Apple Podcasts, which I didn't realize are two different things. Stitcher, Google Play, Podbean.
Spotify.
What else, Miggity Mike?
Yeah. I think you named them all.
Yeah, yeah. So that's exciting stuff, don't you think so, Rabbi?
I think what people need to do is to download the app. Download it.
Which app?
Any.
We just give you seven selections.
Go onto iTunes. Go onto podcast and just search A Priest and a Rabbi, and you'll see our beautiful and just awesome logo of Father Anderson and myself. Download it. Costs you nothing. But it's a way that we can really get the word out.
Yes, because as you know, with anything right now in the digital sphere, it gets more exposure the more that it's been visited and the more that it's been ranked. So if you could go on iTunes or any of these other places, but iTunes is how it's
developed. I'm just, you know, as you know, because we do maintain our statistics and kind of looking, and I'm quite blown away that, you know, beyond North America, I mean, we have listeners in California, in Michigan, Florida, New York, Ohio, listeners in Ontario. But I'm super impressed that we have a listener in Japan.
Yes. That was the one that I enjoyed the most. I'd love to know where in Japan. It doesn't give us the city. But if you're listening right now, the person who's in Japan –
give us a call.
Yeah. You know, it could be my sister. You know, she's moving out there to Japan for she's going to go visit. But I don't think she's there yet, so it's not her yet. But
beyond that, too, you know, beyond just the podcast, you know, if you have comments or suggestions or topics that you would like to hear addressed by Father Anderson and myself, to shoot us an email at apriestandarabbi@gmail.com.
Yes, or leave a comment on actual iTunes where you can do that. So rank it. We hope that you would give it 5 stars. And then leave a comment there and about what you want to hear. Because, listen, the rabbi and I get together each week. We try to stay a bit relevant. We try to look at what's going on in the world today. And we try to see what would be kind of a fun, hot topic that sometimes gets a little deep. A lot of times we like to keep it lighthearted. But let us know. Big questions you've had about either Judaism or Christianity, about looking through the faith lens with big topics. We've taken on, you know, we don't skirt away from it. We've taken on sex. We've taken on, you know, we'll be taking on human trafficking soon, which is now a hot topic here, unfortunately, in Martin County. It's very sad. But today we were going back to the basics of how does a rabbi and a priest get together and talk about some things of faith and show our two different perspectives on things. That's what we do a lot here. And it's okay for us to disagree. So today,
but we still never, let's go back again. Go back to that original episode one. Mm-hmm. Right. And for our listeners, I'm sure you're all aware, right? You charged me with the responsibility of adding a celebrity quote, as I'm a very big fan of Beverly Hills 90210. And I did that. I took this amazing and beautiful moment between, I think it was Brandon and Kelly.
Yes.
And morph that into some form of our prayer service. I think it was in a sermon that I gave, or possibly a benediction at the end. And then we charge you, Father Anderson.
Yes.
With the Alyssa Milano.
Uh-huh.
Where are we with that?
I came through, man.
Okay.
I came through. Actually, you know what I did is that I quoted her in a tweet about her take on divine spirituality, because I'm not sure if she's it seems like she's more like the whole spiritual thing is definitely there. I'm not sure if she puts it in some form of denomination or religion. But what I did do is that I went a step further and I quoted and had the congregation respond to me. We did a call and response of Backstreet Boys. So I don't care who you are, where you've been, what you've done, as long as you love me.
Was it like a flash mob? Did suddenly you all break out into song?
No, I wish it would have happened. A lot of people were too embarrassed to admit that they knew the lyrics, and I'm staring them in the face saying, I know you're in my generation. You know these lyrics. Don't try to tell me you don't know this this boy band. I didn't expect the kids to know. So I got a boy band in there, and it pertained to the gospel. It wasn't just a shtick. It meant, you know, this idea of I don't care who you are, what you've done, where you've been, as long as you love me. Fit that into the gospel of Jesus that, you know, Jesus is here for you no matter where you've been. And love me, I love you, and we can transform your heart, buddy, with Backstreet Boys. So
we can put that to rest now. I think so.
Like, you know, 13, 14 episodes in, we can put that to rest. So one thing we can't put to rest, because it's always going to be there for us to chew on, is what we call sometimes in the Episcopal denomination the Decalogue. I don't know if you all refer to it as the Decalogue, mm-hmm. but is the Ten Commandments. And so today we want to take on this cornerstone.
I mean, we created it.
Yeah, you guys were the – yes. Yes. God created it.
But with the help of Moses.
Yes.
Yes.
But was it? I mean, this is where it all starts. Was it really with the help of Moses?
So, you know, I mean, it's such an interesting concept, right? Because we have in the Torah the notion that, you know, God communes with Moses for 40 days and 40 nights, right? Moses comes down. The people are anxious and they veer in some way, as every generation does, as we read in the Torah, we read in the Bible. And as Moses comes down from Mount Sinai after communing with God and has these Ten Commandments, sees the people worshiping this golden calf, fashioned by Aaron, Moses' brother, who later subsequently becomes the high priest, Moses, out of rage and slight embarrassment, takes those commandments and smashes them, pulverizes them on the base of the mountain. But it's an interesting notion because our text makes it clear that with those Ten Commandments, that Moses himself turns his back to the people and shatters those commandments. Now, the question we have is, what was on them?
That's what we all want to know. What was on those tablets? And have we ever had, because Jews are much better at this, you know, has there been any kind of just wonder and what's the word I'm looking for? You know what I'm saying. You're just staring at me, watching me just wallow in this horrible quicksand of unknowingness right now.
It's okay.
As a Christian.
It's okay.
When you all riff on the text, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
A midrash. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, a midrash. Has there ever been a midrash on that of what might have been on those other tablets?
I think the general Jewish conception is that, you know, really we don't know.
Of course.
And yeah, really we don't know.
I'm glad we agree on that part. The
interfaith agreement.
Yes.
But you know, it's interesting because scholars have always put forward that were those first set of commandments, was there any human involvement whatsoever? And I think that at least my understanding has always been that there was not. That it was completely and utterly defined by, written by, and dictated by God. You know, and when Moses then goes back up to speak with God, there tends to be that notion that God and Moses, divine and human intervention, collaboratively speak together to fashion what we then have as the Ten Commandments.
But why, where do we get that, though, that idea that You're trying to say that he would have co-authored, that if you looked at the Ten Commandments, it says co-authored by Yahweh and Senor Moses.
Well, I think part of the understanding is, now I'm in the hot seat. I think the understanding for us is that because Moses then goes back up again and communes with God and comes down again to present these Ten Commandments, means that there must have been or should have been this divine and human collaborative effort. Because if you look at the Ten Commandments themselves, the first three are very, very and ultimately God-centered, right? So the first one, which goes into, you know, a Judaic perspective of, you know, the 13 attributes of faith, the 13 articles of faith defined by Maimonides, says that I am the Lord your God. Okay. I mean, it's monotheism. It's the
central core of Western religious ideology and Western belief. The second is you shall have no other gods but me. And then the third is you shall not take the Lord's name in vain. And I want to, you know, if it's okay with you, what I'd like to do is kind of, you know, chunk these into sections in some way to be able to start really unpacking and interpreting what that means. Why the need to state it twice? I am the Lord your God. Are we saying now we need to be a little bit more specific with it, for there is only one God? But doesn't that imply I am the Lord your God? There's one God in our tradition, in Western religious ideology.
Judeo-Christian ideology. No, Abrahamic faith.
Absolutely.
And Muslims, the same thing. But wait, you're still not getting, I think you kind of took a little jog away from the original question. So let me put you back in the hot seat. How and why do we think, though, that there was a co-writing on this, co-author, that it wasn't just Moses was up there and God gave him the law, and then Moses brought it down? So Moses is more this intermediary. Because from a Christian perspective, when Jesus does the Sermon on the Mount, a lot of times we believe that is Jesus up there, because the Gospel of Matthew was really the audience for the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew is speaking more to a Jewish audience and trying to say that, hey, this guy Moses, I mean, Jesus is the new Moses. He is the fulfillment of the law. Here he is again up in a mountain up there and speaking and preaching and teaching this new edict, this new way. You've heard it this way. Now I say it this way. And so Moses is he this intermediary? Because if he's co-authoring, man, that makes him a little divine-ish.
So that's interesting. Would it change our understanding if those Ten Commandments had nothing to do with humanity but only God? So if God wrote those Ten Commandments,
yeah,
and there were ten very specific laws that God bestowed upon human beings, would that change from our understanding today of what the Ten Commandments are? I don't know if I'm being clear. Let me twist it to your end. What's the Christian understanding of the Ten Commandments, which I would only safely assume it's the same as a Judaic understanding?
It's a Judaic understanding, but that idea that there's been a co-authorship of the two, I would say from an Episcopal understanding, or let me just say from a Father Christian understanding, that has not been the theology that I've heard rule practice. That would be more that the Lord gave these laws to Moses, and Moses gave these to the people. And so, therefore, this is all strictly from God. God saying, I'm going to give you laws that are about how you treat me and how you love me, and then the other half are going to be about how you treat one another. And it's all about relationship. It's all about being a relational, being in a relationship with God and being in a relationship with one another. That is the key. So then when Jesus comes to fulfill the law, Jesus says it gets back to the two things, of course. So love the Lord with your whole heart, mind, and soul. Mm-hmm. That'll take a lifetime to do. And then love your neighbor as yourself. Everything, all other laws fall underneath that. So this is the cornerstone of it. So if Jesus is the fulfillment of the law, and then we believe that if we believe that man co-authored, or Moses co-authored, the Ten Commandments, then the man had a
stake
touch
in
co-authoring.
Humanity had a stake.
Jesus,
yes.
Too.
But I think, and again, you know, you're going to see so many different gray zones and certain, you know, interpretive understanding when it comes to the Ten Commandments. Whether, you know, you ask one Jew, you're going to get, ten Jews, you get literally 1,000 different opinions. You know, my opinion has always been that in order for Moses to go back up and to speak with God, because God makes it very clear with those first set where he says, go down to those people, go down to your people, for I am enraged.
Right.
Right. God sees what the people are doing, right? They're dancing, they're praying, they're you know, worshiping this golden calf, which is totally opposite to what you know the intent had been. And I think when God and Moses then go back up, I've always felt that there had to have been human involvement in order for those Ten Commandments, because ultimately there's buy-in.
Yeah, but okay, I'm sure there's buy-in, but this can be buy-in because God's telling you. And Exodus 21 through 17, and God spoke all these words. Mm-hmm. So God spoke them all. So you would be sort of insinuating that before, that maybe in, what, chapter 19, that in Exodus 19, that there was some kind of collaboration that was happening when they're on top of Mount Sinai?
But remember, God spoke.
He spoke all of them.
Yes, God spoke.
But
who chiseled them into...
Well, this brings up the whole thing about the Bible itself. And this brings up the whole thing, the difference between literalism and fundamentalism,
sure,
and contextualism, is that you have the Word of God and the Spirit of God comes to humankind. Humankind is this middle person who has to write it down, the different editors, and what happens there, mm-hmm, right? So there is a human touch, which some Christian leaders would not agree with me on that, that the Holy Spirit is working through all of these writers, and it's exactly – but there's – you know, part of Christianity, part of Christendom, they would say, well, we have to be obvious, honest here. There is a Christian, a human print on, mm-hmm, Holy Scripture, because it came through, God decided and chose to allow man to write it. It's different than, I think it was in Mormonism, where I'm not a Mormon expert, but he literally digs up the tablets that have already been made.
But, you know, it's interesting given that interpretive understanding, right? So as you know, if I was a very Orthodox or traditional Jew, you know, the understanding of the Bible is that was written, dictated, everything was the Word of God. As a Reformed Jew, I say, and I believe, that the Torah itself, the Bible, or in this case, the Torah, was divinely inspired by God, but written by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we know that there may be some scribal mistakes, there may be some inaccuracies, there may be some challenges with the text itself, but the message is very clear. And I think with the Ten Commandments, the message is fairly concrete, right? I got the first three commandments that are about God, right? I am the Lord your God, and with that one statement, with that first commandment, there's so much that's wrapped in those "I am the Lord your God" in those five words. I mean, they're so much, you know. And as a Jew, we hear those words and we think about "I am the Lord your God." We think about freedom. We think about slavery. We think about all these things that happen throughout the Jewish understanding. Because, you know, the phrase that occurs so often in our Torah, too, is the notion that says, "I am the Lord your God, for I brought you out of the land of Egypt." Right? So it's about oppression. It's about it's about redemption. It's about freedom. It's about, you know, not giving anyone the ability to be a slave. It's remember the oppressed people, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. And I think that there's so much there. You know, we go to the second one. You shall have no other gods but me. And if you think about it, given the context of which, you know, these were
another written, another translation is also, you shall not make for yourself any idol.
Yes. Okay. So, you know, whether we use that translation, or we use "you shall not have any other gods but me" or "before me," "you shall not make any image" or,
right,
or any idol. You know, where does that come from? I mean, I think that's also based on the experience, right? Why "you shall have no other gods before me" or any molten image?
Well, in 2019, when you wake up in the morning, and I've heard this from a parishioner, it's a great line. Every morning he wakes up, he asks himself, what God am I going to worship today? And that's just with a small g, right? Or am I going to worship the God? Am I going to worship the God of strength, of love, of compassion, of hope? Because, you know, you wake up in the morning and you might have different things flying around inside of your head. And do you want to worship the God of anxiety? Do you want to worship the God of fear? With a small g, mm-hmm, right? These are the idols. These are the idols in our lives right now. These are the idols that we can place, that we can worship, and we can fall down and give a whole bunch of headspace to these idols in our head. And I think the monotheistic religion is not just, sometimes I think in the 21st century, or even myself, I would think about, like, well, it's different for us. It's like we don't have the Feast of Dionysus handing around here. We don't have to worry about some Zoroastrian other gods or some other gods that are competing with us. No, we have smaller case G gods all the time, mm-hmm, competing for our hearts and our attention and our love. And the Ten Commandments come in, especially with that first one, is that which God do you want to worship? Do you want to give your life to? Do you want to submit to? Do you want to give your heart and your life and your soul over to a god of lust?
But is it not saying that at the end of the day, whether it be a god of vengeance or a god of love, the god of compassion, the god of mercy, isn't it also saying, from a Judeo-Christian perspective, it's all of it? It's all of it. We submit to all of it,
sure.
Not just one. You know, I mean, I'll be the first. I'm not one who wakes up in the morning and what I should and I try as best I can to do is, you know, to wake up in the morning and we have a prayer that we say. It says "Mode ani lefanecha," right? Which is a prayer that we say thank you God for the ability to wake up. Thank you God for my faculties. Thank you God for the gift of life that you've given me. And I'm not great at it. I'm really not. You know, and I really try. I really do. When my oldest was born, we had a wonderful, great friend of ours who bought us this beautiful wall hanging that had that prayer on it, and we have it hanging in our daughter's room. And every now and then, you know, it makes me more aware. You know that life is so tenuous that it shouldn't be taken for granted. But how often do we take it for granted? You know, and I think something simple. I mean, even when I was in rabbinical school, we were always taught and told. And I'm sure, you know,
seminary
with you in seminary, we call it the same.
It's seminary. Okay.
You know, if you're going to pray spiritually, use the when you pray at the exact same time every single day. So if it's at night, pray at the same time before night. And I've been doing that practice for 25 years.
The exact same time,
just before bed.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, I don't kneel because as Jews we don't kneel.
Okay.
I don't.
Why don't you kneel?
Fold my because we only kneel before God.
But you're praying.
I am praying, but it's taken in a context.
You could.
Could.
Right. You'd be fulfilling.
Yes, but I think for me, it's a way of centering myself. So as I lie in bed, and I'm one of these people that say, if I say it in my head, it's not real.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I'll have to say it out loud, or I'll go, you know, and if my wife's next to me, I'll kind of mutter it. I don't want her hearing.
Your prayer.
My prayers.
You guys don't pray together.
No. Okay. But I pray for generally the same type of thing every single day. I pray for peace. I pray for the gift of my family. I pray for the life that's been instilled in me. I thank God for the breath that I exhibit day in and day out. And I pray for those that call upon God for health or for healing or for meaning or in search of something that, you know, may their desires be fulfilled.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So the let's just get back to so we've talked about you shall have no other gods but me. You shall not make for yourself any idol. The third one, you shall not invoke with malice the name of the Lord your God. Right. So that one right then and there, we were at a youth camp recently, and we've gone out to these big mission trip youth camps where we're out in the mountains somewhere. And last time we did this, we were out, I believe, in New Mexico, and so the head of the lead speaker who's leading us in worship every single day was asking all the kids there, you know, when's the last time you used GD this or GD that, right? Or you just say, oh God, right? Oh Jesus. You're using the Lord's name in vain. To be aware of that, you might not think it means anything, but this is your, again, goes back to the first commandment. Mm-hmm. Are you loving the Lord with your whole heart, mind, and soul? Are you, is there are no other gods there? And if it is the one and true God, then there needs to be this preciousness and that you have a reverence for who God is in your life. And it's tough because from a secular standpoint or a cultural standpoint, when you say, oh, Jesus, you're not really meaning, oh, Jesus, oh, God, like you're not really throwing darts at God. But it's the reverence of that name, right, that gets taken down. And maybe that might, for you to take time to think about that, could help remove one less rock that's standing in your way from intimacy with God, because the way that you treat his name, because you wouldn't say that about your wife, right? You know, I wouldn't sit here when I'm upset just out of nowhere, just go, oh, Anastasia, right? I wouldn't do that. Stub my toe. Oh, Anastasia, right? Drop
what
something.
Is worse? What is just out of curiosity in terms of vanity and you know, those shall not take the Lord's name in vain. From a very Christian perspective, is it worse to say, oh God, or Jesus?
It's all the same.
So you know, we went back. You know, last week we had talked about, you know, strange and comical, quirky things the rabbi's daughter says,
And, you know, not that this happens often, but every now and then my daughter will blurt out, "Oh, Jesus Christ." Oh, and I go, whoa, you know, that,
ouch.
You know, please don't do that. And she goes, "Well, why? I've heard it." She didn't think about it. She didn't invent it. But she hears it in the playground, or she hears it elsewhere. And I said, you know, well, she goes, "Well, Dad, because as Jews, we don't really, you know, think about Jesus. What's the harm?" And they go, "The harm is that other people do."
Right.
And we need to be respectful. And that's, you know, as a parent, that's what I want most for my kids, is I want them to be respectful of other people's traditions and other people's beliefs.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting, because how often do we hear those words, "Ah, Jesus," or "Oh, Christ," or "Oh, God." And that notion of, have I now taken God's name in vain? And even if I haven't, please, God, get me through the rest of the day. Am
right.
I taking God's name in vain that way? Or
no.
Am I asking God for strength
yes.
to get me through whatever challenging moment I may be having?
Yes.
But where's the gray zone?
Well, I don't think there is a gray zone. One is you're calling upon the Lord's name for strength, for compassion, for hope, for strength, for whatever you need. The other one, you're doing it because out of being flustered by the anger that you're sort of focalizing, is that a word? You're centralizing, you're pushing all of your frustration and anger upon this war that becomes meaningless, and you're not really kind of throwing darts again at God, but you're not using it you're not calling for God to really come and be your savior, your comfort, your protection.
So, but what if I said, "Oh, dear God, get me through this day."
Uh-huh.
"And if you get me through this day, I promise that I will commit to X, Y, and Z."
Yeah, I mean, you're not using the Lord's name in vain. I mean, you're deal-making, which is always a slippery slope with God,
okay.
Right? Because you got to always unfold to his will. But, you know, it's always – you could play the deal-making game with God and see what happens. You know, if you give me this parking space, I'll actually, you know, do whatever for you, God.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean –
it's such an interpretive commandment.
I don't think so. It's straight up. It's straight up. Every example you just gave me just showed me that is one of them is using it almost as a throwaway term of how to throw your anger, your expression, your frustration on. And the other one is actually, "Dear God,
so
please
but
help
the
me.
Interpretive
me
part,
strong."
So,
it is a relationship. Yes. Again, yeah, you wouldn't use your wife's name and you wouldn't use her name in vain. You wouldn't. Have you ever done that?
I get it. But if we were to say, "Oh, God, what a really trying day." Now, I get it in the semblance of understanding. I'm invoking God in an experience that I am going through, to which I'm asking God for some form
inclusion.
Okay.
Yeah. You're including him into this. That's all that God wants is relationship, right? All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come on back because there's other commandments that have to deal with also, obviously, relationship with other people, not just with God. But also, why are these commandments here? What do they mean today? And also, you know, what were the other 10? If we were going to make up another commandment, if we could write another commandment, what would it be? And can you question these commandments in the 21st century? Is there any kind of gray area here? And then when you throw Jesus in the middle of this, Jesus starts to have his commentary on some of these commandments where he takes this step further. So all that's coming up in when we get back from break. All right. Hey everyone, it's Father Christian. I want to invite you to a brand new YouTube channel that I have started called Your Favorite Christian. It's on YouTube. Go in there, check it out, subscribe. I release a new vlog every single Monday. It's following around the adventures of a wacky priest and getting into the community and learning new things and talking about everything from relationships to pop culture to major acts of faith. So come join us, or come join me on Your Favorite Christian on YouTube. I know your heads are bopping in your car right now as you're listening to that rock and jamming music. Yeah, that was recorded by the rabbi and the priest inside of a studio, just jamming away on our on being influenced by 80s music, which we all love and adore. Hey, so today we are talking about the Ten Commandments. We're having fun with it. We're kind of like ripping and tearing, you know, we're having some fun here, playing with them and seeing what is what pertains to us in the 21st century, what is locked in, is there gray areas here? But let's just talk about all 10 right here. And I'm going to do, I think where I'm coming from here is the Exodus version here. Lord help me if maybe this is the Deuteronomic version.
Was that taking the Lord's name in vain?
I know. God help me. God help me if I'm wrong here, because if I'm about to speak your law and I'm quoting the wrong scripture here and misleading our thousands of listeners right now, then Lord help me. So
but, I'm just teasing you.
But inshallah, this is the one that this is the right one. So here we go. So here are the commandments of God to his people. So I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of bondage. You shall have no other gods but me. Okay. You shall not make for yourself any idol. Number two, numero tre, you shall not invoke with malice the name of the Lord your God. All right, think about all these. Numero cuatro, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Five, honor your father and your mother. That's a good one we want to get into, because what if your father and mother are just, they ain't good. They ain't good people. You shall not commit murder. When I was a kid, I always thought like, well, that was obvious. But then Jesus says, well, he takes it a step further and starts talking about anger with that.
But it's an interesting notion as well, just the terminology. Lo Tirtzach says, you shall not murder.
Uh-huh.
And not that I'm the world's leading authority on the King James Version, but right. I believe the King James Version says, thou shalt not kill.
Okay.
And I think that there, you know, we'll get to that. I think that there's a
difference between murder and killing.
Between murdering and
absolutely.
Killing.
And that's come up before. So, yeah, you shall not commit adultery, right? You shall not steal. You shall not be a false witness. And finally, you shall not covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. So these all 10, and thank God, I mean, from a Christian perspective, we have grace, because Jesus goes to a place where he says, you have heard these laws, but he says, you know, if you, even with adultery, says, you've heard, don't commit adultery. I say, don't even have bad thoughts about your neighbor's wife. And if you do, tear your eye out. Or you hear, do not steal. Well, if you're going to steal, well, then, you know, chop off your hand. I think Jesus is not really speaking literally. If not, we'd all be walking around, you know, without hands and eyes. Mm-hmm. But I think he's trying to get to the seeds that are underneath that could lead to murder, that could lead to lust. You know, you start playing around with, in the 21st century, they talk about this. I think I was reading oh, gosh, the great author on marriages. It starts with a G. This is terrible. Anyways,
Gilbert Gottfried.
No, not Gilbert Gottfried. But he's talking about the porn, right? That porn, when you start to mess around with porn can be easily a gateway drug. Not only is it now starting to define your own sexual interest away from your spouse, but then you start to get excited about porn, and then you start to do the little chat rooms, and then the chat rooms can start to lead to making you make a phone call. Next thing you know, you're in an adulterous relationship. Jesus is saying, go all the way back to the beginning. You just being in porn, you're already in an adulterous relationship, because you're planting the seeds inside of your heart.
But that's the whole notion of what coveting means, right? You know, from our understanding, coveting is, you know, the thought process or the thinking of it, because the thinking could lead potentially towards temptation, which then leads to action.
Right.
Right. And each one, I think each one of the latter commandments, you know, feed into one another. Right. If I steal, what am I really doing? A, first, I've coveted my neighbor's property or something that my neighbor has. I've gone through beyond just the thinking, desiring, and wanting. Now I've gone through temptation. Well, would it be so bad? Suddenly, I've gone through the act itself. I've taken. So now I've stolen from my neighbor. And I've committed not just why I've broken one commandment, I've broken two.
Right. And the other part of this too, like these last, let me see here. We got covet, false witness, steal, adultery, murder, six, father and mother. Okay, so we got six of them that is just based on relationship stuff here. Let's cut back to honor your father and mother. So we'll leave that one out. These last five, murder, adultery, steal, bear false witness, and covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. A lot of that also has to do with something you and I got to one point, which was, do you first have to accept God's love, or do you first have to love yourself? Mm-hmm. You say first got to love yourself to be able to accept God's love. I say you got to be able to accept God's love to be able to understand what it's like to love yourself. But no matter what, there is a love of yourself and a love of God to appreciate and to accept God's undeniable love for yourself. And when you do not, when you struggle to feel that you're full and complete, made in God's image from Genesis 1:26, that you, I'm an Episcopalian, not a Baptist, so sometimes I'm off of my scripture. That when you do that, you might start coveting your neighbor's wife because you're not fully finding full validation in your own self and your own marriage for whatever reason. There's some self-deprecation and mm-hmm. some hatred of yourself. That what God has blessed you with, that you would start looking now at your neighbor's wife or looking at your neighbor's boat and being like, gosh darn, I need to catch up with. See, I didn't use the name in vain. I said, gosh darn, I need to catch up with the Joneses.
But the intent,
right?
Just to go back on that on that vanity there, you know, the intent when we say, oh my gosh, oh my goodness, we're placating it. I mean, in some point,
do you know where heck is?
What do you mean?
Heck is where you go when you don't believe in gosh. Okay. That's a good Mormon joke. I used to work with the Mormons out in Utah when I worked at the Shakespeare Festival out there. So I think some of this does these last five. It's all about relationship and about being.
But to go back on that one about, you know, thou shalt honor thy mother and father.
But this is where it gets tricky,
right? Is it about honor or is it about respect? Well, or
you,
are they?
You know the Hebrew better than me, so you tell me.
But it's actually about both. It says kaved, which means heavy. And it means to honor. So there's something there about honoring one's mother and father. Respect, I think, is earned, right? To honor, the honor of one's mother and father is very different than respecting one's mother and father. Okay, I may do something. My parents may tell me something or bring me up in a certain way of understanding. But if I don't agree or I'm challenged by something, if I go against what they're saying, have I dishonored my mother and father? Have I disrespected them? Or in some way, is it about autonomy and, you know, the way that we live our own lives individually?
Well, you heard a great story. Who was it? Were you with me? Well, we just heard this great story the other day about a father who told his son to come out into the field with him and to go and plow. And I think I heard this actually in Interfaith Service. It was at this Black History Month, and he told his father, said, now you got to get out in here in the field and you got to come and do the work. And the son said, no, I'm not. And he said, what do you mean you're not? He said, Dad, I want more out of this life. I want more out of this life, and I want to do something different. I have a different calling. And he's like, excuse me? He's like, I have a different calling. And he stood up for himself. And then the dad first wanted to smack him across the face because he wasn't, to his point, wasn't honoring him. But he realized that his son is growing into his own manhood. And he said, well, what do you want to do instead? He goes, I want to go to the library and I want to study. I want to go read these great books. And he said, God bless you, son. Go do that. And so in a way, would you say he was honoring his dad and honoring him that did he dishonor his father there? I think at the end, his dad felt very was like, wow, that, I want my son to be better than I am.
But that's also an open and honest conversation between father and son, right? What about the instance where, let's say somebody is a hunter and makes their subsistence on hunting animals for food. Maybe they take it and, you know, they're a food processing plant and they've been doing that for decades and it's been in the family business. And a child says, I don't want that. I don't believe in killing animals for that purpose. It goes against my belief or what I firmly understand. And the father says, but it's been in our family tradition for, you know, hundreds of years. This is what we do. You're rejecting what we gave you. Is that about dishonoring? But I think the example you gave is that when there is an open and honest conversation that allows somebody else to see someone else's perspective, I think it is about honor.
Okay. So, but let's get a little trickier here. Let's just say you came from a home where mom and dad weren't great moms and dads. And so let's say it was not just a broken home. It could have been dad was just a real jerk and mom was not present at all. And for whatever reason, you know, everyone's got their own battles that are going on. But for whatever reason, the child did not feel respect or love and actually has so much animosity towards her parents. Do you think that God is obviously is omniscient, omnipresent, knows everything, that a therapist, if you go into therapy, a therapist is going to want to get you to a place where you forgive your parents and see them as your mother and father, and maybe get you to a place where maybe you do honor them. Maybe you don't respect them, but you honor them because they brought you into this world, and then you come to a place you realize they did the best they could, which was pretty bad, but that's all they knew how to do because they were just really broken people. Mm-hmm. And is that where that you must honor your father and mother, even if they're completely terrible people? I mean, let's go really bad. I mean, let's just say they were abusive or whatever. Do you still, how does a person in your congregation, when they read that, knowing that might bring them to tears, you know, to say, mm-hmm. how do I honor these parents who abandoned me? Let's just say, you know, is God asking, is he being this ultra high therapist, knowing that the pathway of forgiveness will actually heal you as the child, knowing that you can let go of this pain that they had for you? I mean, for Joseph, he's dealing with his brothers, not with his parents, but he gets abandoned by his brothers. If he stayed in a victim state and didn't forgive them in his own heart and didn't have some kind of love somewhere, he wouldn't have gone on to be so successful. He would have just been this horrible victim.
But that's interesting, because with reconciliation, whether we look at it from, you know, and I think Joseph is a great example, because ultimately at the end, Joseph, you know, largely says to his brothers, I harbor no ill feeling.
Yeah.
Look at me. I'm the second most important person in Egypt.
Yeah.
Without you, I don't know where my life would be.
Yeah.
And I think he's had a long, long time to reflect and a long time to ponder what was going on. But I think that raises a really big issue. I mean, how do we reconcile with ourselves, to which we were raised or we were born into, of saying, you know, maybe it wasn't the most healthy of upbringing when I was a child. And am I able to forgive? And maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not able to forgive. And maybe that's where, you know, the therapist comes in to be able to work with those inner feelings, to be able to say, you know, I'm not asking you to, you know, fully respect your parents, but is there a way of getting to a point where you're able to see in some way, you know, the challenges or the difficulties through family life.
I think that happens when you get older, when you start to grow into being a man or a woman, and you can start to now see your parents less as failed Superman and Superwoman, and start to see them as human beings who made horrible mistakes, maybe, and then you can that pathway to forgiveness, so you can get to a place as a child and say, okay, I can honor them in some way as being the people who brought me into this world, but maybe I don't respect or I have major issues with what they did to me, and I don't have to have a thick relationship with them and go and sing Kumbaya, but for my own health, to get to a place of forgiveness. And maybe that's what God is all about here by saying, honor your father and mother. Because I'm sure there were pretty dysfunctional parents back then as well, even though that, you know, obviously parenting has changed. So what else we got here?
I want to go back to just the fourth commandment, if that's okay.
Okay. So thou shalt not drive a Toyota.
Yeah. I think you're out of luck there.
Oh, yeah, I'm a Toyota kind of guy, so I got to.
But, you know, the commandment that says you shall remember and you shall keep the Sabbath day.
Boom. That's probably one of the most broken ones by some of the most devoted followers of the Judeo-Christian
faith. And I think it's interesting to notice, well, you know, as Jews, when we usher in and we bring in Shabbat, we have two candles that we light, right? And it's not by accident. You know, the two candles, one is to remember the Sabbath day. The second is to keep the Sabbath day. Shemor et Yom HaShabbat and Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. And I think that there's something really actually amazing about that commandment. And again, that it's interpretive in the understanding of how we observe that commandment, right? My observance of Shabbat will be very different than somebody that is more traditional, or even somebody of my own movement. You know, my observance of Shabbat may be very different than someone else who's a Reformed Jew, than their observance. And I remember years ago, when I was in rabbinical school, I had a very challenging conversation with my rabbinic mentor, and my rabbinic mentor had said, what do you do on Shabbat? What makes something, and there's a difference between being special and making Shabbat holy, right? And we are to make Shabbat holy. And I said, well, you know, as a student, we go to school Monday through Thursday. Friday we have off, largely in preparation for whatever we might be doing that weekend, if we're leading services Friday night or Saturday or Sunday, religious school on Sunday. And I said, well, my Shabbat is Friday. And my rabbinic mentor, horrified, said no. And we engaged in a conversation, and I said, look, you know, Friday is, you know, it's a peaceful time. I don't have to get up at 6 a.m. I can sleep in a little bit. You know, for me, that's my day of rest. Because Saturday, I worked in the very far west end of London, and it would take me an hour and a half to get to religious school. We had religious school on Saturdays. Religious school started at 8:30, so I would leave around 6. I'd get there around 7:30, prepare, get everything ready, and 8 o'clock until 11:30, we would have religious school. And I said, well, you know, I'm already there. I'm leading.
You're doing a lot of work.
I'm doing work. And, you know, when we're done, then I lead the congregation.
If you were married at that time, you'd be away from your family.
Yes. Right. But the interesting thing was, you know, I had said, you know, I'm already working.
Yes.
And then I'm leading a congregation through prayer. So by the time I'm done at 2 o'clock, you know, why not go back up to my home and prepare text and study and everything else for the week ahead? And she said, that's your mistake. Because, you know, in that semblance, it's not work. Because what you're doing is you're empowering a congregation. You're educating children. I said, I get that. She said, but when you go back and you go back to your home and you're preparing for the rest of the week, you can do that on Sunday. You can do that later. You can do that Saturday night. You don't need to do it on Shabbat.
Okay, so for the mom that's home with her kids on Shabbat, all that homework that she's got to do, let's say – for whatever reason, let's say she's a single mom, and so she's got to do all this work with the kids. She got to get them ready, got to shower, and that takes a tremendous amount of work, right? But that wouldn't be going against the Sabbath, because that's love of family, caring for the family that needs to be done. But if she starts to now slip in, maybe she has a part-time job where she can work from home and starts trying to send some emails, or if she starts doing any other kind of work, like what, like mowing the lawn or something like that.
But it's interesting because we have to also define what is work.
Right.
Right. And from a very traditional perspective, the act of work is the act of creating. So to create something on Shabbat is forbidden. Now, as a Reformed Jew, what I understand...
But can I go back to creation? Yes. Does that mean that you can't procreate?
So, actually...
I'm talking about a married man or woman.
They actually say if you engage in sex on Shabbat, not only is it a commandment or a mitzvah, right? If you happen to engage in sex on Shabbat, it's actually known as a double mitzvah. It's great because, okay. You know, whatever.
But you are creating.
Yes. 40 weeks later.
Sure. But you're starting the process.
Yes. But, you know, the act of work, for example, so somebody very traditional would not, you know, turn on a TV, for example, on Shabbat. Right? We wouldn't turn on another.
What are you creating with the TV?
So technically you're creating a, you know, and I'm sure anyone who's an engineer would argue with me on this, but you're creating a spark, right? A spark that creates electricity. Or it's the creative act in and of itself. I can't, if I was a very traditional Orthodox Jew, my kids wouldn't be able to draw pictures on Shabbat. You're creating something.
Okay, but what this is where I think where Reformed Judaism comes in, and this is where, from a Christian, where Jesus comes in, where he starts breaking Sabbath and doing certain things on Sabbath, that is Sabbath made for man or man made for Sabbath. What is the whole point of Sabbath,
so,
right?
And you know, if we look, it's rest.
It
is about rest. And I think if we look at it from that understanding, it's about... How I define Shabbat, and I define it to my community, is Shabbat is the ability to do the things that you cannot do during the week that you can only do on Shabbat, with the understanding, because that just renders something special, doesn't render it holy, with the recognition that today is God's day of rest as well as my own. I'm invoking God in my day, which then makes that day holy.
Yeah, but you and I are both clergy members, and there is no way I view Sunday as my Sabbath. My Sabbath day is Monday, and I turn off my phone. I try to turn off my phone. I don't respond to emails because I am working, and it's glorious. I'm worshiping the Lord, but there's a lot of work that goes into it. There's a lot of preparation that goes into it, I mean, it's all glorious, so I can understand that that's beautiful. But if God is saying, I made you, I know who you are, and in order for you to be at your tip-top shape for the other 6 days, you need a seventh day to just chill out,
yes, and
dude.
Just rest, absolutely.
Just chill out, my dude. And then on Sunday, you're doing 3 to 4 sermons and maybe also doing a confirmation class in the evening. You're going to be, like, poo on Monday. Yes. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, it's interesting. It's interesting because, you know, on a Shabbat level.
Would you agree, though?
Absolutely.
So you take a separate day. Would you call Monday your Sabbath? Or
no.
would you just call it a day of rest?
I would just say it's my day off.
It's like 2-day weekend.
Yes. I get a 1-day weekend. I get Mondays off. But even Saturday, by the time I go home and it may be, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock, usually around 2, you know, and I've been working since 8 o'clock. You know, there's something about the rest of that day of the recognition of really spending real time with my family.
With family.
And doing things that I can't do.
You're not fixing the pipes in the bathroom. You're not doing laundry. You're not catching up on bills.
No, because I'm also the least handy person on the planet.
Okay.
This has shown is that there certainly is a lot more of these commandments to follow.
Oh, to play around with,
and things
yes.
that we can certainly talk about. But I think as we conclude,
yes,
just a couple things that are quite noteworthy that at least from our perspective we'd like to tell a lot of our listeners. On March 12th, which happens to be a Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock, Temple Beit Hayam at the Rappaport Center at Temple Beit Hayam, we'll be bringing in Robert Putnam, an American. He is a professor at Harvard University, talking about the crumbling American dream and how to fix it. He is a well known. He's a writer. He's he bridges topics between education and religion. So if you are interested and available, that is Tuesday evening, March 12th, 7 o'clock at Temple Beit Hayam. Tickets can be purchased. They are $35 and they can be purchased on our temple website of www.tbhfl.org.
All right, I got two things for you. On March 6th is our Ash Wednesday services. So we are starting in the morning at 7:30. Then we got one at 12:10. Then we actually have one at 5:15 that's with our community meal that we serve that's in the Pinterest Center. And then in the evening at 7. So if you want to get ashes, come on over. And if you're from a different faith or religion, just come and experience it. We'd love to have you there over at the church. And then also the NAACP is having their banquet that's going to be on March 9th. And would you believe it? I'm actually receiving an award. You know, they're going to give an award to a clown like me. So if you want to get give them a call if you want to get a ticket there, because it is their biggest fundraiser. I think it's like $75. Also, shameless plug, I started my own YouTube channel, Your Favorite Christian on YouTube. Go subscribe. Get your notifications. Leave comments. One of the last thing I took on was human trafficking and sex trafficking, because that is a hot topic right here in Martin County. And we're hoping to bring on an expert this next Friday to talk about how that's kind of been something that's really shocked our community here. But it's let's not be silly here. It's a global epidemic. So,
and if we could just end with the 11th commandment, which is what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. I think that there is a lot of strength and healing that our world needs, which is to bring back kindness and to bring back humanity in some way.
Bring it back, baby. Bring back that kindness. Love on your neighbor, as Jesus says, also love on your enemy. So, all right, God bless you. We will see you next Friday. Peace.